Well, I've got some news I have to pass on to you before we get into our special report tonight on fluoridation, a very important show. Just a very, very sad note to Coast to Coast guest and noted astronomer Thomas Van Flandern has died of colon cancer, and we just found out about it. He has been fascinated with astronomy from a very young age. Tom was just on with me and Richard C. Hoagland several months ago talking about theories of Mars and what might have happened. He's just been a wonderful guest to Coast to Coast. I was just with him several months ago on the West Coast on a panel discussion, and Tom was answering questions from the audience and giving his views on gravity and planetary comets and what have you. He founded what was called the Meta Research Institute, publishing a quarterly journal, and just a good man. Born in Cleveland, Ohio, worked and retired to Washington, D.C. with his wife Barbara and four children. They spent the last years of his retirement in the state of Washington. Our dear friend Thomas Van Flandern has died of colon cancer. I'll be back in a moment, in just a moment, when we talk now about fluoridation. You know, for over five decades, the American Dental Association has continuously endorsed the fluoridation of community water supplies and the use of fluoride-containing products, which they say are safe and effective measures for preventing tooth decay. Some say no way. We'll find out why in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Two guests for you for the first couple hours, and then Dr. Paul Conant will stay with us for questions at the end and perhaps some of your stories about fluoride and drinking water. Dr. Paul Conant is a graduate of Cambridge University, holding a PhD in chemistry from Dartmouth College. Paul is the executive director of the Fluoride Action Network, has researched fluoride's toxicity for nearly 11 years. He's given invited presentations to the Fluoridation Forum in Ireland, the Japanese Society for Fluoride Research, and the American College of Toxicology. Here he is, Dr. Paul Conant. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Fine, George. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us on this very important subject tonight, Paul.
Thank you.
Bill Osmundson is a leading dentist in the fight against fluoride use as well. Bill, how long have you been opposed to this?
About 5 years now.
Did something happen for you to wake up, I guess, and say, this is not good?
Well, actually, it was my patients that kept telling me slowly, Bill, you have to look at this stuff. I've been a dentist for 31 years, and I actively promoted fluoridation for about 25. And my patients finally said, look, you got to look at this. And it was other areas of dentistry that I realized that my profession was behind in, that we were still plugging mercury into people's mouths and it shouldn't be done and it didn't need to be done. I thought, well, what else is a problem in my profession? And so I started looking at fluoridation.
All right, Paul, let's get a definition from you on just what is the water fluoridation? How long have they been doing it?
It started in 1945 in the United States, and it was endorsed by the U.S. Public Health Service in 1950 before any trial had been completed and before they'd done any serious medical or health studies. Fluoridation is the deliberate addition of fluoride or a fluoride-containing compound to the water supply at a concentration of approximately one part per million. That's 1 milligram per liter. And this is portrayed as being a very small level, this one part per million. But actually, George, it's 250 times the level of fluoride in mother's milk. Now, mother's milk, as you know, is the baby's first meal. It's the absolutely perfect balance of minerals and proteins and everything
sure.
else that the baby needs for growth, growth of their teeth, bones, and everything else. So nature was giving us an important message there, but that's been ignored by the American Dental Association and the other avid promoters of this practice. What it means, of course, is that in the communities which are fluoridated, a parent that bottle feeds their baby and makes up the formula with tap water is going to be giving that baby 250 times more fluoride than nature intended. And that, to me, is a very unwise thing to do.
How did this idea come about, Paul?
Well, for about 30 years, at the beginning of the 20th century, they were trying to understand what it was that was causing the strange mottling and discoloration of the teeth in states like Colorado and Texas and Arkansas, Arizona. And eventually, by 1931, three different researchers determined that what was causing this discoloration, mottling of the teeth, was fluoride in the water. And that's when they changed the name from dental mottling to dental fluorosis, which literally means poisoning of the teeth by fluoride. And it is, in fact, the first visible sign that the body has been poisoned.
Now, wait a minute. A little confused here, Paul, because you're saying that originally they spotted things wrong with teeth in these several states.
Absolutely.
And they blame the fluoride, but now they're putting the fluoride in the water because they think it helps our teeth?
Well, yes, but the dentists that were doing this research in the 30s were puzzled by the fact that even though these teeth looked awful, they were black or brown and horrible-looking teeth, they were very surprised that the tooth decay in these children was not high. They expected, when you see the black teeth, you're expecting them to be decayed.
Absolutely.
They weren't.
Okay.
And so they thought, well, maybe we can find a level that we can benefit, we can reduce tooth decay without causing too much dental fluorosis. And they settled on one part per million, because above one part per million in those days, you got a dramatic increase in dental fluorosis. And at the same time, you kind of got this reduction in tooth decay, and that kind of plateaued out about. It didn't get much more benefit above one part per million. But now, one half of this experiment has not panned out, because now in America, 32% of children have dental fluorosis. Not 10%, but 32%, and including children in non-fluoridated communities. So the simple fact is that we're getting fluoride from many more sources today that we didn't have in 1945. And right now, our kids are being overexposed to fluoride, not underexposed to fluoride.
Paul, how do they produce fluoride? How do they make it?
Well, about 90% of the fluoride that is added to water comes from the scrubbing systems of the phosphate fertilizer industry. This is true. It sounds bizarre.
I heard this years ago, and I couldn't believe it.
Well, in the beginning, in 1945, the fluoride was coming from the aluminum industry. But today, the aluminum industry is anxious to keep hold of the fluoride and make synthetic cryolite, which they need in the production of aluminium. But today, most of it's coming from the phosphate fertilizer industry. And for about 100 years, the gases that were liberated when you treat the phosphate rock with sulfuric acid, two nasty gases, hydrogen fluoride and silicon tetrafluoride, they were really devastating the local environment. They were ruining the vegetation, the citrus groves, and the cattle were crippled near these plants. Eventually, the regulatory agency said, you've got to scrub this stuff. You've got to put on air pollution control devices and capture those gases. And it was very simple. All they had was a spray of water. And this spray of water produces a compound called hexafluorosilicic acid. And when the concentration of that compound reaches about 23 or 24%, it's put in tanker trucks and shipped around the country and put into our drinking water. Ironically, they're not allowed to put that into the sea by international law. They can't dump it locally because it's far too concentrated. And it costs money, of course, to send it to hazardous waste treatment facilities. However, if you can persuade somebody to buy a hazardous waste product, it no longer is classified as a hazardous waste or regulated as a hazardous waste. It's now regulated as a product, as a commercial product. And so basically, water fluoridation represents two extraordinary activities. One, it represents a way of getting rid of hazardous waste, one. And two, it is using the water supply to deliver medication, which is an incredibly extraordinarily unusual practice. We've only done it once before. We did it with iodine because of goiter and iodine deficiency. But after a very short time after putting iodine in the water, people were coming down with hyperthyroidism, and they stopped. So this is the only time, essentially, that we've used the public water supply to deliver medicine. We put a lot of chemicals in water, but it's those chemicals are to make the water safe to drink, to kill the bacteria, and so on. But this is, you're literally using the water supply to deliver medication. And, of course, that's a terrible, terrible way of delivering medication because you can't control the dose. You can control the concentration at the waterworks. The engineers can make sure it's one part per million most of the time. There have been accidents. But you can't control the dose because you can't control how much water people drink, and you can't control how much fluoride they're getting from other sources. And as I've said, we have the evidence now that kids are being overexposed because the dental fluorosis rates are over the moon.
Okay, now, Bill, Dr. Osmundson, you said for years you promoted fluoridation. How did you get pulled in on thinking and believing that it worked?
You know, when I was in school, of course, the dental school, they taught us that it was effective and safe and all the rest of that. And I had questions, but they gave reasonable responses. And when I was out in practice, the town that I lived at had fluoridated water in it, and the surrounding community did not. And people would come in with complaints, and I'd say, but I see the benefit on people's teeth, that there's a benefit from the fluoridation. And so I had a little game with my employees, and I'd say, okay, I'm going to tell you where the address is, or rough address is, whether they're getting fluoridation or not, of the next few patients that come on in. And so when they'd come in, I'd look in their mouths, and I'd say, okay, you live in town here, right? And they'd say, yes. Next patient would come in, and I'd say, well, you live up in Pack River Road, Rapid Lightning Road, somewhere on up there in the hills. And they'd say yes. And I was right about 80% of the time. And so I was convinced in my mind that fluoridation reduced dental decay, except for one thing. I wasn't right. I wasn't looking at the effects of fluoridation, and I wasn't looking at the risks to the teeth of fluoridation. And so the teeth do become a little more shiny, glossy, harder looking, a little more glassy looking. There is a definite thing that you can see with the fluoride. But what I was really comparing more was the socioeconomics. People out in the country were poor. People in the city had more money. And when we separate out socioeconomics of the rich and the poor, we find that about 82% of the rich have very good to excellent teeth, and about 55% of the poor have very good to excellent teeth. And so we can't compare the rich and the poor. You can't take a community that has a bunch of wealthy people, compare it with a group of people, and they have fluoride, and compare that with the poor people who don't have fluoride.
Right.
You're going to always see that there's a problem because you're comparing socioeconomics.
So you needed to compare. You needed a study group that had the same socioeconomics together, I would guess, right?
Exactly. And when we start looking at that, and we start looking at the splitting and cracking of the teeth, and when we start looking at the fluoride, what we call fluoride bombs that happen in the teeth, the statistics are now showing that there's no benefit. In fact, the EPA scientists, through their union, gave probably the best summary that I've ever seen on fluoridation. And this really knocked my socks off when I first read it. In summary, we hold that the fluoridation is an unreasonable risk. That is, the toxicity of fluoride is so great and the purported benefits associated with it are so small, if there are any at all, that requiring every man, woman, and child in America to ingest it borders on criminal behavior on the part of governments. When I read that, I couldn't swallow. I paced up and down the floor of my office, and I said, what do you mean the risks? It's supposed to be safe. What do you mean the lack of benefits? There's lots of benefits. I've seen it. I know it. There must be there. And what is this criminal behavior on the part of governments? And with more study, I began to realize that what the EPA scientists are saying, and these are good scientists, these are good professionals that are talking about this, and what they've said is absolutely correct, that it is very unreasonable and risk. So one of the things I've done recently is look at the laws, and Paul has been talking about fluoride as a poison. And I thought, no, it's a drug, because when you're intending to treat people or mitigate disease or reduce dental decay, then it's a drug. And so I started looking at it as a drug, and I looked in the laws and pharmacy. However, when you look at fluoride, it and the laws, the laws are very, very clear that fluoride is a poison, because a poison means, for instance, in Washington, anything that will cause violent sickness or death with 3,889 milligrams or less. Well, we know that 15 milligrams of fluoride can cause death in a child. So to the Board of Pharmacy, my comment to them in Washington State is, look, you have to decide whether 15 is less than 3,889. And they look at me in silence, and I say, it doesn't take a lot of brains to realize that 15 is less. In Oregon and in Vermont and other places, they'll talk about 50 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. Well, an adult, 5 milligrams, and that's defined as a poison, but an adult, 5 milligrams per kilogram of fluoride will cause death. So in every state that I've looked at it, fluoride is defined by law as a poison. Now, most drugs are poisons, and that's why they're given out as a prescription or they're habit-forming.
Right.
But legend drugs are poisons.
Okay, now we're gonna find out how it got into our drinking water and what's behind it, because there must be some politics, Paul and Bill. But, Bill, because you're a dentist, why has the ADA, the American Dental Association, for over 50 years jumped up and down and endorsed this?
Well, they say that it's highly effective. But Sharon Begley in Newsweek on her article on science probably said it better than anyone else on second thought. You know, scientists are supposed to change their minds when evidence undercuts their views. When scientists have an intellectual stake in a particular side of a debate, well, they just don't look anymore. They just believe. So we've got a belief system here by the scientific dentists. That's one major thing. They just believe. They refuse to look at the science opposing their belief system. And they, when I call them up and I say, you know, I'd like to come over and talk to you about the science of this, they refuse. The Department of Health refused. They will not discuss or talk it. It's almost like if they don't talk about it, then it makes their theory safe. It makes their theory okay because they don't want to talk about it anymore.
You know, I can add to that. In 2006, the National Research Council produced a 507-page review of fluoride in drinking water. They looked at the toxicity, over 1,000 references. It took the panel 3.5 years to produce this report, 507 pages, 1,100 or so references. On the day that was released, they concluded that the safe drinking water standard was not protective of health and needed to be lowered, and that was at 4 parts per million, needs to be lowered from 4 parts per million. On the same day that was released, the ADA came out and said, this report is irrelevant to water fluoridation at 1 part per million. I mean, they didn't have time to read the report, study the report, look at the references, do a health risk assessment, or any of that stuff, and yet they were able to dismiss it just like that.
Paul, is there one company that manufactures this, that, you know, gets the remnants from the fertilizers and puts it together?
There are a number of chemical companies that act as distributors, but it's the big phosphate companies down in Florida mainly. So Cargill is one of them.
Talking about a billion dollar industry? Or?
No, I think. The phosphate fertilizer industry is certainly.
No, I mean the fluoride.
The fluoride. Bill Hersey from the EPA, one of the scientists that Bill Osmundson was talking about just a moment ago, he estimated maybe $200 million a year is the swing from what you would pay to get rid of it as a hazardous waste and what they get as an income. So it's not small change, but personally, I don't think it's the tail that's wagging this dog. I think Bill has it more on his.
But Paul, you mean if they didn't put it in the water, they'd have to get rid of it as a hazardous waste,
or use it in some other way, like the suggestion.
Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. We'll get right into that. Special report tonight on fluoridation. Our friend Jerry Purnell, science and science fiction writer, just sent me an email, and he said, George, what this is compulsory medication. It's not a good idea. It's not what we think of as freedom. And Jerry is absolutely right. We'll be back with our two guests as we continue to talk about fluoridation on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're talking about fluoride in your drinking water with Dr. Paul Cunnett, the PhD in chemistry, Bill Osmundson, dentist. And Paul, we were talking about hazardous waste. So basically with fluoride, if they didn't dump it in our water, they'd have to do something else with it.
Yeah, they could recycle it. I mean, they could convert it back to calcium fluoride and use that as a chemical feedstock. They've suggested that they might be able to use it in making cement. That's one other possibility. But all of this wouldn't make them as much money as they get for this very easy giveaway product to the public water supply.
You know, my friend Jerry Purnell, the science writer and science fiction writer, just mentioned me in this email that this is compulsory medication. They are forcing us to take medication. And he also went on to write, what happens if they want us to take other things and put it in our drinking water? When does it stop, Paul?
The government and the courts are very clear on that. It was Doe versus Rumsfeld, you know, with the anthrax scare, where the court ruled even under emergency conditions of war, the government cannot force an individual to be medicated with a substance which has not been specifically approved for the purpose and manner it is intended. And, of course, fluoride has not been approved by the FDA to treat or mitigate dental disease, dental decay, and it's not been approved being put into water. So it can't even be a drug because it hasn't been approved. It's illegal to sell an unapproved drug.
Now, Bill, in your particular case, not only are you a dentist, by the way, I went to pre-dent school for 2 years at the University of Detroit.
There you go.
Good school, by the way, good school. You have a master's degree in public health. So what do some of your friends in that field say about fluoridation?
Well, most of my public health friends are in favor of fluoridation. When I get to talk to them, then they start backing off and going, well, you know, we haven't looked at the research. And, you know, the big thing is if they start speaking up against fluoridation, they lose their jobs. Now, for one reason or another, the people who have promoted fluoridation, when I get to talk to them and we sit down at the table and we sit down at a dinner and I go through some of the science on it, they aren't in their jobs very long. For one reason or another, they just don't stay there because their public health is like the marketing side of medicine. And they don't look at the science as much. That's not their purpose. Their purpose is to promote the agenda of the scientific community, the health department, or whatever it is. So they're given an agenda, get everybody fluoridated. That's a wonderful thing, so fluoridate everybody. They don't look at the science. They just start promoting like a wild salesman an idea without looking at the science.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is the problem, that most dentists and doctors don't have time to read the primary literature. I can. I'd be a professor of chemistry. I've been retired for 2 years. I can read everything. Hats off to Bill. He found the time to do it. But most people can't. And so what they're doing is they're relying on other agencies, big agencies, like the Center of Disease Control. Now, every day, somewhere in the world, somebody is quoting the Center of Disease Control as saying that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. What people don't realize when they make that quote is that the Center of Disease Control only has one division involved with fluoridation, and that's the oral health division. And the oral health division is staffed with people with dental qualifications, not medical qualifications, not toxicologists, not risk analyzers, and their job is to promote fluoridation. They'll even send people out to support mandatory fluoridation in states on a statewide basis. They did that in New Jersey, in Arkansas, in Oregon a few years ago. And so they've got a conflict of interest. This division, which you would think at being the Center of Disease Control would be able to make the ultimate judgment on whether this chemical was safe or the health effects and so on. No, they are promoting fluoridation. They cannot make an objective, independent assessment of the safety of the program that they spend all their time pushing. There's nobody at the CDC who's overseeing this program outside the oral health division. That's a shocker, and it should be brought before Congress. They need to testify.
I mean, you know, the more I think of it, though, Bill and Paul, I am furious that they would put this in our drinking water without our permission and approval. I mean, if somebody doesn't want to brush their teeth and take care of themselves, that's their fault, and it's their prerogative. And then for government to put this in for whatever reason, I think it's almost negligent.
You know, there's a court case down in Florida where a gentleman felt exactly the same way as you do, George, and he took it to court. And the ruling was that the water utility only delivers the water to the tap. You're not forced to drink it. You're not forced to drink it. But what they didn't bring up in that court case is the fact that there are millions of people that can't afford not to drink that water. People from low-income families cannot afford bottled water, reverse osmosis, and the other ways that we have of avoiding this stuff, at least for drinking and cooking. Poor people are trapped by this. And what makes this really pernicious is that not only are poor people trapped, but they are more vulnerable to fluoride's toxicity, because we know that fluoride is worse for people with poor nutrition. And the way you're going to find poor nutrition in the United States is families of low income. So you've trapped them,
right,
and you've made it worse for those kids.
And certain races have it worse.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Okay, what's the downside? There's a lot of different issues we're going to talk about tonight in the 3 hours that we've got you here. What is the downside of fluoride? What does it do to us? Well, how does it harm us?
The risks you're talking about.
Let me give you two things. Right. Sorry, Bill. Do you want to do this?
And you two jump in,
Paul,
anytime you want.
Go ahead, Paul, and you do two, and I'll do two.
Okay. I'll do two things. Number one, 50% of all the fluoride that you take into your body every day, whether it comes from toothpaste or water, pesticide residues on fruit and so on, 50% is excreted by the kidney, and the rest concentrates in the bones. So steadily over your lifetime, the fluoride in your bones is getting more and more concentrated. The first symptoms of fluoride poisoning are identical to arthritis. We have 68 million Americans with arthritis. No one's seeing if that's caused or whether fluoride is contributing to that. And the second thing with the bones is it makes the bones more brittle. Over a lifetime, we could be seeing an increase in hip fractures in the elderly. That's one thing. The second one is we have now 23 studies which shows that fluoride lowers IQ in children. Not water fluoridation, but in endemic areas for fluorosis in China and India, they have found that at not very high exposures, I mean as low as 1.8 parts per million of fluoride in the water, lowered IQ in children. 23 studies now we have on this from China, from India, from Iran, and from Mexico. And so, I mean, ask yourself, George, I mean, let's do a risk-benefit analysis. We might reduce tooth decay by a very small fraction. It's not very convincing. There's no difference in tooth decay in between fluoridated, non-fluoridated countries, between fluoridated states, non-fluoridated states, the United States, and so on and so on and so on. But for a minuscule, so let's give them a minuscule saving of tooth decay, and you've got to risk your child's mental development? I mean, this is utterly absurd. And then, as you say, not to give people the choice on this thing is...
Yeah, I mean, what happens one day when they say, we think people are too hyper, so we're going to put antidepressants or something in the water?
Well, they almost did that. They were considering putting lithium in the water because they felt like it was safe, and they contemplated that. They said it could be done. They were ready to start working on it, and then they started to find the side effects of lithium, and I thought, well, I guess we're not going to put it in the water.
Recently, a few years ago, there was a doctor at a medical conference in London who advocated putting statins in the drinking water.
Well, cholesterol reducers, right?
Yeah.
But again, if somebody wants to go to his doctor and say, look, I want to lower my cholesterol, and I think statins work, put me on a prescription, that's their choice. But, you know, they shouldn't be forced to take it.
Right. Well, you know, I hate to bring this up because it sounds as if, it rather, could be taken as rather insulting. But the Nuremberg Code, which was developed in 1946 in the wake of the awful experiments that the Nazis did on patients and the inmates of the concentration camps, produced this Nuremberg Code. And it lays down very clearly what human experiments you're allowed to do, what you have to do to have a human experiment. And the answer is you've got to have the person's consent to do a human experiment. Well, is fluoridation an experiment? Well, the National Research Council laid out all the research areas that would need to be done. There's a huge research gaps, they say, in fluoridation. Huge research gaps, and they say you should do this, you should do that, you should do that. The same with the Medical Research Council in England. You should do this study, you should do that study. And in Australia, you should do this study. I mean, that is tantamount to admitting, if you're going to be saying there are research gaps, we need to do more research, you're saying this is an experiment. And if it's an experiment, then you have to have the individual's consent, and they don't have it.
All right, Bill, and you were going to talk about two more points of the downside.
Yeah, I want to expound a little bit more on Paul's IQ, not your personal IQ, Paul, but the IQ.
I'm sure that's damage. Off the charts.
Damage caused by fluoride, excess ingestion of fluoride. I ranked the states, 50 states, United States, with the least amount of people that are fluoridated, ranked on up to the most number of people fluoridated. And then I charted in mental retardation. And we measure that in the schools fairly well, of how many children in the schools, what percentage of the children in schools are mentally retarded. And the states that have more fluoridation have double the amount of mental retardation. We know that IQ is going down the more fluoride we get, and the amount of fluoride we're getting is increasing a significant amount. Now, those opposed, those putting fluoride in the water will say, oh, no, no, that's unproven. But one area that we all agree on is dental fluorosis. Fluoride in water increases the prevalence of dental fluorosis. Now, those promoting fluoridation will say, but that's just a cosmetic problem. Well, my response is, okay, let me take my key and go to the hood of your car and scratch the hood of your car. Remember, it's just cosmetic, right?
Yeah.
The car will run just as well. But cosmetic damage is damage. And when you look at cosmetic dentists around, you'll find lots of cosmetic dentists around. And some of them are making some of their living treating dental fluorosis. So it's not like there isn't some profit in this. And fluoride treatments in the dental office can be $30,000 to $100,000 a year for dentists. And it goes on and on and on. So dental fluorosis can increase the cost of dentistry. But one other point, when we're looking and comparing dental expenses, how much does the average person pay in this community for dentistry, and you compare the fluoridated and the non-fluoridated state areas, you would expect to see a huge reduction in dental decay in the fluoridated communities. What do we find? Nothing. There's no benefit. We don't find it. Now, there's one study that says, well, there's a 0.5% benefit. Well, we claim, the people promoting fluoridation claim that there's a 15 to 40% decay reduction in fluoridated communities, not a 0.5%. And when you look at the study carefully, that 0.5% really is cherry-picked on the data. There's no significant difference between one group or the other group. We have tons of computers. We have everybody's dental records on computers, and yet they don't publish any information, hardly at all, on the difference in dental expenses in fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas, because dental expenses don't go down in fluoridated communities. When you stop fluoridating water, it doesn't go up. That makes no difference. Countries in Europe, all around, they all have the same amount of decay.
When I was a kid, Bill, my mother would rush us to the dentist all the time. She was obsessed with having good teeth.
Good for her.
But she also jumped on everything that was new. And in the 50s, she got a notice one day when I was in school, and it said, a dentist is coming to the classes, and we're going to do what is a new procedure called fluoridation. And we're going to bring a little Georgie out of class with your permission. You got to pay for this. And the dentist is going to do a week's treatment of fluoride. And I was on that list, Bill and Paul, and I'd go in as a kid, as others would, and there was a dentist shooting fluoride into our mouths. I remember that. It was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, well,
God knows how much we were getting into our system then.
Too much, for sure. But there wasn't as much fluoride in other things. Right now, we have a huge increase. As a nutritionist, this is one of my big concerns, is that back in the 50s, we didn't have fluoride antibiotics. We didn't have fluoride toothpaste. We didn't have all these other
mouthwash, everything.
Dental products, mouthwashes and everything. We didn't have post-harvest fumigants. We didn't have pesticides. All of these are fluoride products that increase our exposure, increase our dosage, increase the amount of fluoride that we're getting into our bodies, and it just seems endless, where they're adding more and more and more, and no one is saying, hey, we're getting too much. Where should we start reducing fluoride? And in my opinion, fluoride is a wonderful chemical, but it shouldn't be ingested. And so we at least need to give people the freedom of choice to go and get their fluoride from other sources if they want to swallow it. For example, reading the toothpaste tube, it says drug facts. The drug with the intention to treat is fluoride. And it says use a pea-sized amount, and if you swallow more than that pea-sized amount, contact the Poison Control Center. How much fluoride is in that pea-sized amount of fluoridated toothpaste? About 0.25 milligram, the same as one glass of fluoridated water. Now, if it's not safe in the fluoride toothpaste, how can an industrial waste product pumped into water be safe for us, and we're supposed to drink more than one glass of water?
I've got to tell you, when I buy toothpaste, it's without fluoride.
Yeah. Good for you.
You know, how do we know, by the way, can fluoride harden arteries and things like that?
Well, fluoride is attracted to the calcium hydroxyapatite, which is the mineral in teeth and bones. And by the same token, if any tissue is calcifying, you know,
your arteries calcify.
Yeah. Then the fluoride is going to go there like a magnet. Same with things like kidney stones. The fluoride is going to go to that place as a magnet. It's a sort of chicken and egg situation. Does the fluoride help to precipitate this calcium hydroxyapatite? Does it kind of catalyze the formation of these deposits? Or is it after the event that the calcification takes place and then the fluoride goes there? But one of the things that the National Research Council report said in their report is that the formation of kidney stones may be the most sensitive endpoint of fluoride toxicity.
My gosh. Now, is fluoride in every major drinking source around this country?
170 million people drink fluoridated water in the United States.
2 out of 3.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's about half the number of people worldwide. Most countries do not fluoridate. 98% of Europeans do not drink fluoridated water. France, Germany, Austria, Belgium, Portugal, Italy, Switzerland, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Luxembourg. All of those countries don't fluoridate. And yet their teeth are just as good, according to World Health Organization data, as the countries which do fluoridate. I'd like, if I could, George, go back to what I consider to be the great fluoridation gamble.
Let's do that when we come back,
okay.
Paul, right after the break. Give us a website, Paul, if you would.
Fluoridealert.org. Fluoridealert.org.
All right, very good. And when we come back, we'll continue our special report on fluoride in our drinking water, in our toothpaste. It's all over the place. Last hour of the show, we'll open up the phone lines. You can chat with Bill and Paul and maybe even relate a story or two. We'll be back.